Today on the 10-12 podcast, we've got Coach Jamie Pinkerton of Iowa State Softball recapping the huge series win over Oklahoma State this past weekend. Jenna Becerra of Believe Softball joins us to talk about the three incoming softball programs in Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, how they look this year, and what to expect coming up. Plus, Brady Vernon of Softball America joins us to talk a little bracketology, Oklahoma State's poor weekend, UCF's win streak, and make picks for the upcoming weekend. Make sure you are outfitted for the end of the college baseball and softball seasons with Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They just released some brand new raglans. They've got one for every Big 12 school. They've got a great Citronaut for UCF, a fantastic Oklahoma State shirt. They've even got a shirt for Colorado, who doesn't have stickball. They've got every Big 12 school covered currently, and of course, Colorado. And a whole lot more. They've got more than 30 schools available and a ton of great gear at charliehustle.com. Do not forget to use our promo code 101215. That gets you 15% off all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, partnered with the Big 12, fans of the Big 12. They love it as much as you do and the schools that you love. So go to charliehustle.com, check out the incredible Big 12 gear that they have available for you today. Get yourself ready for the postseason in baseball and softball and start getting yourself ready for football season. It'll be here sooner than you know it. 10, 12, 15, 15% off all non-sale items. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 14 teams in the Big 12 Conference, plus Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah. We are the flagship show of the 10-12 Network. Find every show on the network at 1012network.com. And of course, we are partners with Sports Social, Europe's biggest sports podcast network. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us for our midweek episode. It's Thursday. On Thursdays, we talk softball. And when I said Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado and Utah, I actually meant it this week. I didn't just say it because that's the intro that I wrote once they were announced they were joining. We have two great guests. Jenna Becerra of Believe in Softball is going to join us. She has been covering Pac-12 softball for a long time. She's going to give us a little look at Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah, where they are now and how we feel about them when they head into the Big 12 conference in softball next year. So we've got that interview coming up. Also coming up, we got look, I like Leah being here on the show. Not only is she the trash talk queen of the 10-12 network, and honestly, like, we just want to do, if I could, we'd do a segment where Leah just goes out and trash talks other players in softball. She'd just go on location each week and just start yelling things. But alas, I don't think we're going to have that. But Leah not only is so gracious as to help co-host this each week, she has an interview with her former head coach, Coach Jamie Pinkerton, after their incredible series win over Oklahoma State this weekend. Of course, that means Leah is also here. Leah Nelson, welcome back.
Thank you so much. It was a fun last weekend getting to watch Coach Pink coach those girls to their highest ranked series win ever. So I'm excited to talk about it today.
Awesome weekend for Iowa State. Rough weekend for Oklahoma State from a bracketology standpoint. And joining us, because Eric is not here because UCF played today, although he got done early, but that's too bad, Eric. You told me you couldn't be here, and I booked a guest that I've been trying to book for weeks. Alas, he has a small child, so we finally got this to work out. He is Brady Vernon of Softball America. Brady, welcome.
Thank you. And yes, it's a very busy household in the Vernon household. My wife is also a tax accountant. So as soon as tax day got over, it was a lot more free time. And so able to be here tonight. And so happy to talk softball.
A baby and tax season.
Wow.
Goodness.
What could be better than that?
In the middle of softball season, the heart of softball season. Yeah. Yeah. You guys, busy, busy, busy. Brady, of course, is the resident bracketologist for Softball America. His latest one came out on Wednesday, so we're going to talk about it. I want to talk about that series between Iowa State and Oklahoma State. Look, what happened this weekend has kind of backed up my concerns and fears for Oklahoma State this season. This is still a very good team, Oklahoma State fans, Cowgirl fans. This isn't a shot at them whatsoever, but they've kind of gotten away with the fact that they are really good at hitting extra base hits. They are really good at hitting home runs and triples and doubles, and they have been able to hit enough of those late in games and close games to kind of get away with it. They've been able to hit solo home runs. Where Oklahoma State struggled, A, on the road, most of their five Big 12 losses, four have come on the road, two to Iowa State, one to Baylor, one to BYU. Of all their quad three losses, the ones that are really hurting their resume right now, they've all come on the road, two to Iowa State, one to BYU, one, well, Tulsa keeps fluctuating between quad two, quad three, but still, road loss you'd like to not have on your resume if you're Oklahoma State. Hopefully they don't add another one with Wichita State, which is going on right now. I hope I didn't jinx that. And so they've struggled on the road, and they've struggled to be able to get in there and hit singles. They're not stringing hits together. They're relying on big hits. And we saw that against Iowa State on Friday and Saturday, an inability when they'd get a batter, they'd get a hit, and then they couldn't do anything. And then they'd get a hit, and they couldn't do anything. And they couldn't get the long ball to work for them until Sunday, when they put it, looked like Oklahoma State saved everything for Sunday, and they blasted out of the ballpark time and time and time again. But this is the concern for Oklahoma State. This is still a team that, as we'll talk with Brady, projected to host, but they, Brady, I want your thoughts on Oklahoma State, and then we could talk about bracketology and the effects of that specifically. But what are your thoughts on this Oklahoma State program?
Obviously, that lineup has a lot of newcomers. You know, this past weekend in Ames, they didn't have Talon Edwards, who is one of the few returners. And it's even crazy to think that because, you know, she's still 18, 19 years old because she was an early enrollee. And so I think we have to kind of take that in the part. You know, it is a road series. There's only three main returners. And even like Megan Bloodworth, she's more known for her glove than her bat. You factor in that, you know, they made a change at a hitting coach early into the offseason as well. So I think that plays a part into it. But, you know, they can be very good, as we saw in the series finale, that they kind of salvage. But to your point, they do hit a lot of home runs. I think, like, in the game notes before the Wichita State game, it was saying how they've hit 51 home runs compared to giving up 17. And so that's going to work out really well. But there's just days that, you know, the long ball is not going to be there. And so it's been very up and down with that lineup. And I think it's, you know, it's how they kind of react and come back. And I kind of think I wrote that, like, this past weekend was, you know, when there is so many youthful players stepping into new roles, like, it's how do they learn from these processes? Because I think when we saw last year, when we had that veteran lineup at Oklahoma State, they weren't really making those adjustments when the offense kind of took a tail turn. But I mean, it's still impressive what they've done. I mean, this is still a team that took the series from the consensus number one, Texas. And be that, that's mostly Lexi Kilfoyle, who's going to give you a chance to win every single day that she's out there, and just how impressive she's been. I mean, if it wasn't for the greatness of Nyjah Kennedy, you probably could make the argument she's been the best pitcher in America this season. And so I think there's still very, very competitive. It's just that thing where, you know, you saw the RPI drop, and so now it's like they might not be a top eight seed. And it's the eye test versus the metrics, you know, the fun stuff we go through every single year. I still think they're probably like a top eight, top 10 team. It's just trying to put that consistency offensively, as you mentioned.
Leah, you were there in Ames. You watched the game on Saturday. What were kind of your takeaways from Oklahoma State? And I'll give you a minute to talk a little Iowa State as well. You had a nice time in Ames on Saturday.
I did. It was a blast. But yeah, nothing against Oklahoma State. I mean, they're a great team, but when I was watching them, like, they just didn't seem like the Oklahoma State team that I was used to seeing time and time again the past, like, 4 years that I was – or 3 years because of COVID that I was playing. And so, I don't know, it was just surprising. It didn't seem like they were that high-energy team that was – that I was used to. And granted, I Oklahoma State might not think this, but, like, there's a rivalry between Iowa State and OK State. It might just be us – girls making it up, but we always compete against them. I mean, we've taken one the past couple of years. And so I'm not surprised by the way that Iowa State competed against them, but I am surprised by the way that Oklahoma State responded. I mean, Iowa State had that win on Friday, which was great. Really big confidence booster, but I was honestly, a lot of the alumni that went, we were expecting Oklahoma State to come back home run, kind of play like they did on Sunday. And that's just not the case. It seemed like they were playing back on their heels, almost hesitant. And so they're a great team. It was almost kind of disappointing to see. It seemed like they were just not in it over the weekend.
Like I said, I do think this is a young team. And I think they've performed so well and Lexi's been so good that we've kind of forgotten about the questions we had coming into the season where there's a lot, they replaced a lot. There's a lot of youth. They didn't hit the transfer portal as hard. He wanted to play the girls on the roster and develop this team. And they've, I'm not going to say they have exceeded expectations, but when you reach that point, then you have to look at the moment and say, well, this is a little bit disappointing. I would still say if you based off preseason expectations and questions that we had for this team, the fact that they're still sitting here with a likelihood to host, barring, you know, some crazy stuff happening, that this would still be a successful season for a team that has replaced as much as it has, really even just over the last 2 years, some of the names that they've had move on. So I want to talk about the bracketology that Brady put out. As of right now, you've got 7 teams in. Look, everybody, sign up for Softball America, sign up for D1 Softball. I have subscriptions to both because I'm a junkie. Especially once bracketology starts, I'm just like, I want to see it all. I need to see it. I need the breakdowns. I want the articles. And look, Softball America, you guys are doing an incredible job when it comes to the recruiting side and the youth side. Like, I promise you, when we get off season, I'm gonna be sitting here going like, where's everyone's recruiting class? Who's got what? What are we doing? Who's the number 4? Who did Texas Tech sign? I want to know. I'm getting a little bit weird about this stuff, but that's okay. Like I said, you've got 7 Big 12 teams in the field as of now, 3 hosting. I want to know of the teams you have in. You've got OU, Texas, Oklahoma State hosting. Texas, number 1 seed. No surprise there, what with the being number 1 in the RPI. And they've got more quad 1 wins than anybody else in the country. It's not close. Oklahoma at 2, which is very deserving based off the RPI and the record. OSU is down to the 12 seed. You have them now. And then you have Texas Tech, UCF, Baylor, and Kansas in the field. I want to ask this, Brady. Based off where you have the teams right now, who are you most concerned you're wrong on? When I say concerned, I mean least confident in them actually. Are you unconfident that any Big 12 teams that are currently in might not be come Selection Sunday?
I think the two that might falter out would probably be Texas Tech or Kansas. It's kind of interesting just because those two just played each other and with Tech taking that series and it was very big. I think it's just Kansas has the issue of like they start off hot. They have like a big win against Texas A&M in the non-conference as well. But they just haven't pitched as well since that OU series. And I think that's kind of just like hurting them because that, you know, the offense isn't super high powered, even though I say that in Tech and Kansas played a game where there was almost 30 combined runs. But I say that knowing that I think they're both playing better than Baylor is right now. Baylor lost to UT Arlington last night. And, you know, looking at the schedule, for those that don't know, to qualify as an at-large for the tournament, you have to have a 500 record or better. And Baylor is testing the waters right now. They're 4 games above 500. And they have a couple decent series. I think they finish out with UCF, BYU, and Houston. And then a road game at Utah, who has been a lot better lately. And so if they go 3-7, they're going to need a win in the Big 12 tournament to even qualify to be an at-large. The reason why I'm not concerned that they would fall out is because they would, if they're going to lose that many games, that's the only way their RPI is going to drop toward like 30 and 40s. They just did too much early on. And like their strength of schedule is being high and like their run at the Mary Nutter is really saving them from a metric standpoint. That's the weird thing when we get into these brackets is like, Baylor did take the series from Tech, I think it was just a few weeks ago, but I think that Tech and Kansas are just playing so much better, and whether that's just because Baylor's injuries or whatnot. But yeah, I think that, you know, Kansas and Tech are gonna have to play well to stay in. I will say that I think this year the bubble is probably weaker than most years. There's just a lot of teams lacking a lot of quality wins. And you're seeing really weird jumps in the RPI. Like Nebraska didn't do anything wrong yesterday and they dropped almost 8 spots. And they're firmly on the bubble too. So I think, you know, as long as you keep winning, as we kind of mentioned, that if Kansas were to take a game from Texas, I think that would almost solidify them like having a really good shot because The weight of a top 5, top 10 RPI win is bigger than anything else when we come to these metrics. And if you kind of look at past years, which I do with the bracketology, as much as the wins and, you know, the top 25 wins, top 50 wins that qualify, you know, there is a big gap in just what the team's RPIs are for the teams that are last four in compared to last four out. And so whether people like it or not, that just seems to be the last kind of go-to like method for the committee. And so I think that's going to be what's really interesting for those two teams.
That's why I like having the resumes that we built out. I mean, look, you mentioned at Mary Nutter, the wins over Missouri and UCLA and Oregon for Baylor are doing a lot, especially the Missouri and the UCLA wins. Kansas, that top two win over Texas A&M. I think for Kansas, it also hurts that Baylor continued, you know, they swept that Baylor series and Baylor has struggled. And so that series is still quad one, but it continues to slowly drop down. They need to bounce back. And then Texas Tech, you know, they've got a couple of quad ones, Texas State, Baylor. They need to add a little bit more to the resume, and both have opportunities. Oklahoma State's got both Texas Tech this weekend and then Kansas the following weekend. All those are at home, but I mean, everyone's got opportunities. I think this weekend, I mean, this is a big weekend for Baylor. They're going to host UCF for three games, which leads me to want to talk about UCF here just a bit before we make picks. UCF currently on a 10-game win streak. They got, I think, the biggest, one of their better wins of the season over FAU on Wednesday. Why Eric is not here in a 1-0 win. And it's not just that it's a quality win over a top 30 RPI opponent. It's not just that it's the best win, in my opinion, of this 10-game win streak. UCF has struggled in so many of these close games. To face a quality opponent in a midweek where things can get weird and get a 1-0 win over FAU, who I believe is still sitting atop the standings in the AAC right now, I think it's a positive sign, and it tells me almost more than the last nine in a row do, considering who UCF played during that stretch, about UCF at this point in the season.
I personally love having UCF in the Big 12. I think they are proving themselves. They're fun to watch. And like you said, midweek games, especially this late in the season, are so hard, tough to play and bring the energy because you put so much energy in those series on the weekends. And so for them to like grit that one out, win 1-0, it doesn't have to look pretty. It's so impressive. And I'm definitely rooting for them as the season goes on.
Yeah, I to the point, like, for those that have not like watched the American this year, it has been an absolutely insane conference. you know, Wichita State came into this week sixth, which they won it the last few years. And, you know, they added a lot of teams from the conference USA, such as FAU, who's been a very quality team. And yeah, it still leads it by a game. But I mean, to the point, like, I mean, last week we saw they were one in our poll in the South America. Well, Duke lost to Campbell, and you know, these Wednesdays have just been very, very wacky. South Alabama shut out Mississippi State tonight, without even using their ace, Olivia Lackey. And so it kind of keeps the streak going, win 10 in a row. And like a lot of UCF's losses are very quality losses, and just when they weren't kind of finding things out. And I think one of the most impressive things is like you have Jada Cody back kind of hitting at her All-American level from a few years ago when UCF hosted a regional. And you know, with like Sydney Ball Malone, you're always going to get quality pitching. It's so crazy to me to see Sarah Willis, who, you know, was more of like this athletic outfielder, kind of pitched a little bit at Washington, turn into last year's AAC Pitcher of the Year. And so just to kind of see them start to get rolling, I'm hoping... UCF always has this tough case where, you know, if there is two hosts in Florida, sometimes they're underseeded just to drive another team, which is a whole nother conversation for another day about the driving limits and the bracket and what it is. But I mean, they're making their case. They should be, you know, a two seed definitely. And I kind of tweeted a few weeks ago, you know, the path for UCF to be the fourth place team in the Big 12 by the end of the season was certainly there. And I think a lot of people came back, well, what about Kansas? What about this? And I was just like, well, they beat Kansas, and they also just have been, they've looked really good outside of the big three that they've played so far. And they still have to play Oklahoma, which, you know, it is what it is. Oklahoma is having its struggles, which is weird for Oklahoma. I mean, they're already up to four losses, which is the most they've had since 2021, which they only lost four games that season. And so it is really impressive. And I think just the coaching job that Malone has done last few years is just a testament to what she's building at that program and what she's able to do, how she's able to recruit California really well. And so it has been really fun to see the Knights like good again, especially after kind of like a rougher year last year, especially after hosting 2 years ago.
Leah, was my prediction before the season 3 Oklahoma conference losses or 4? Because we're at
It,
3.
I'm
Do I need one more?
I'm almost positive it was 3, and you said strictly in conference, so I'm actually really impressed.
Thank you, Texas.
Oh,
Well, we're gonna make picks for this weekend's games. I told you guys what games or series we're gonna pick, and I gotta pull up the email because I don't remember which ones I picked.
I can't remember
It's
either.
okay. This is why I put things in email form so I don't have to remember. Ah, here we go. Perfect. Great. We're not picking UCF Baylor in this, but I do think that UCF Baylor series is big for both teams. It's in Waco. And look, as you mentioned. Yes, UCF got swept by Texas and swept by Oklahoma State, but they took the series from Texas Tech and Kansas. If they were to take the series from Baylor, Texas Tech is looking, or UCF is going to be in a potential driver's seat to get that 4 seed, depending upon what Kansas has to do the rest of the way. And Kansas still has to play Oklahoma State. And hold on, I got schedules pulled up here. Da, 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 da. Where is it? And
Texas this
Texas.
weekend.
So, like, if UCF were to steal this series on the road from Baylor, UCF sitting pretty for a four to be the fourth place finisher in the Big 12, which would be, I'm kind of wild considering where they were not that long ago, and to be on a streak like that. So, and for Baylor to try and get things kind of turned back around, like it really does feel like things are not slipping away. And look, this is a team that has dealt with injuries, a lot of injuries, and it's been a struggle. And lots of teams are getting swept by Texas. Like, that's okay. But they've lost 4 in a row. You bring in a hot UCF team to Waco. We're not picking it because I actually didn't do it because I forgot that Eric wasn't going to be here and I didn't want to make Eric pick this series this weekend. So we're not going to pick it. But I think it's a huge series for the Big 12. I think it's a huge series for UCF and for Baylor. And I would laugh heartily if a UCF team who somehow made their way into the like right outside quad one was a 2 seed at Florida or Florida State. Because Florida State would absolutely hate having to deal with that. Okay, let's pick the series this weekend. I skipped UCF Baylor because I thought Eric was going to be here. He's not. That's okay. But we are going to start with Iowa State and BYU. And I understand that this doesn't have a lot of implications on the Big 12, but I can pick whatever series I want. And Iowa State coming off of their biggest conference series win in program history. And I'm testing a theory here, Leah, and I'm sorry to test it on
Okay.
BYU, but I have a new working theory that whatever school we bring on as a guest on the podcast, their team doesn't do well the following weekend in conference
It's so
play.
true.
I am pretty sure that we might be a jinx, so I'm really sorry, Coach Pinkerton.
He's gonna be so mad.
If it doesn't go well this weekend, I promise I'll start bringing you on before the season even starts, or we'll save it for Big 12 tournament.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit worried that Coach Pink was on. It also means it's not good news for Arizona State, or Utah, if that's the case.
Gosh.
BYU hosting Iowa State. That series starts Thursday. 3-game series Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Brady, as our guest, who wins and what's the record?
I'll go with the home team. I think the home team, if I remember correctly, but I'll go with BYU. I've always liked their offense. I'm a really big Violet Zawodnik fan. I think she's done an incredible job. She's a really good center fielder. I'll say they take 2 of the 3 games.
Leah?
Honestly, I have to agree with Brady. That seems to be the common theme. But Iowa State is coming off of like a great weekend, and I'm really proud of them. They were playing great softball. It's so fun to watch. But BYU's offense is crazy, and especially with them being at home, I think they're gonna take two. But Iowa State's gonna come and win. I think the Sunday game, 2-1, BYU. Or not the Sunday game, Saturday game, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It's hard.
Sorry, Saturday game.
Look, I don't like just agreeing
You
with
can.
everyone and picking everything. I know I can. I know I can. I did. Man, I did a terrible job last week. I'm gonna believe the curse is real and take BYU to sweep. I'm sorry, Coach Pink. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Please, please, please continue to do so. You're a fantastic guest, and we really do like having you every year. But I would be surprised, and I don't mean this poorly, if Iowa State put on another pitching performance nearly as close to what they did in Ames last weekend. It was such an outlier, and BYU's offense has been so good this year.
Right.
I have a feeling BYU's offense will get them a 3-game sweep, and it's a weird weekend for Iowa State because they're going to play Utah Valley on Sunday, and then they got to come home for St. Thomas on Tuesday, and Iowa got at it. But I'll take BYU to go 3-0 in the sweep. Okay, Oklahoma State hosting Texas Tech. Oklahoma State, by the way, got the win over Wichita State 6-5 on the road on Wednesday night, which was a good job avoiding what's not a bad loss, but just another loss where they don't want to have it. Brady, who wins and what's the record?
Going with a cowgirl sweep to kind of bounce back, going back at home. I think Texas Tech has a conference ERA near 8. And so I think that is kind of the remedy Oklahoma State might need this weekend and just being back in Stillwater. And I think, you know, bouncing back tonight and a comeback win against Wichita State was a good sign. And so I'm going to go with the sweep for the Cowgirls.
Leah?
I'm going to change it up. I think Texas Tech is going to sneak one by. It's going to be really tough, but I think OSU will win 2 and Texas Tech will have 1.
I don't like feeling like I'm being an OSU homer, but again, I think they play so much better at home. I think Lexi's going to be on it this weekend. I think they'll play her Friday and Sunday. And a Rosenberry should be able to do enough. Look, this Texas Tech offense isn't as good as last year, but it's still a good offense. They can still swing the bat well. They can still hit the ball well. I expect a weirdly low scoring game on, well, not weirdly, playing Lexi. I think you'll have a close game Friday. OSU's been playing a lot of close games on Fridays against everybody. I think they'll have, and as long as they get that Friday win, then they'll probably get the sweep this weekend. So I'll take OSU 3-0 as well. All right, Texas at Kansas. Kansas, a win over Texas could really cement the postseason for them. Again, I feel like we're a curse. I don't feel like Casey Hamilton has been as good ever since we had her on the podcast. I'm really sorry, Casey. I promise I won't have Katie Brooks on and curse her as well. And we had Casey, and then we had Coach McFalls back-to-back, so I feel like I was a double curse, and I'm really sorry. Texas at Kansas. Brady, who wins and what's the record?
I'm going to go with the Texas sweep. I think just kind of like going off those points of the Kansas pitchers, you know, the numbers haven't been as great. I think entering the OU series, Katie Brooks hadn't given up a home run. And I think that's changed over the last couple of weekends, especially after Texas Tech. And Texas has been swinging the bat really well, especially last weekend. Reese Atwood, who was the hottest hitter in America to start the season, she went kind of through a slump, and then she had a really, really good weekend last weekend. So I think she's made the adjustment to the adjustments. I think Texas is kind of really clicking right now. We'll see if maybe there's like a lull game, you know, coming off like just a lot of success, being a consensus number one. But I'm just kind of trusting that they have the offense. They have so many arms that they can show. And it's hard for me to see them losing, dropping a game right now.
Leah?
As much as I want Kansas to win a game, I do think Texas is going to go 3-0. I feel like Kansas is going to start feeling the pressure a little bit. They know there's a chance to make postseason. And so I think, and Texas is such a great team already. So I think they're going to just struggle this weekend. I hate saying that, but
I mean it's a big last few weeks for Kansas. Like it's not,
yeah.
You play Texas at home, then you go to Oklahoma State, and then you get BYU who right. hits the ball really well. And so like you really, I mean they've got a midweek against Kansas City. You really don't want to go like 4-6 down the stretch here. Like you'd like to try and at least go 500, steal a game from Texas or steal a game at Oklahoma State and hopefully sweep BYU. Like you really need to try and at least finish 500 over these last 10 games Because if you do, you've picked up a win to add to the resume that's really going to help solidify their postseason. And I think, yeah, you want to win the series, but like if you're playing the odds, if you could steal one this weekend from Texas, like Brady said, like you've got to feel really good. And so Texas is playing really well. I'm not going to pick what I think. I'm going to pick what I hope. And I'm going to take Texas 2-1. And it's not a shot at Texas. I really want 7 Big 12 teams in the postseason, and I want to feel confident like we did a couple weeks about Kansas getting there. And a win against Texas, like Brady said, should make them feel really good, barring just something insane happening, which knock on all I've got's rug and toy couch cushion, so just knock on faux wood. So we'll go with that. Okay, Brady, you have been awesome. Really appreciate your energy and your effort and your time. You do a great job covering college softball. Like we mentioned, you obviously are the a bracketologist when it comes to it. Plug it all, sir. Where can everybody check out all the work you do?
Everything's on Softball America. And not to like gloat, but right now we are still kind of reviving the site with new ownership that's really backing us. It's just been a tremendous experience over here. Tara Henry, who is the Great Britain national team head coach and UCLA alum with the national championship, she's kind of the general manager, and I kind of run like all the site website stuff. I pretty much write 95% of the content that is on there right now. And so, yeah, we're really trying to get this back afloat. We're going to have a lot of cool stuff in the summer with like the pro scene and recruiting and stuff. And so you can always follow me at Brady Vernon on X, Twitter, whatever we're calling it nowadays.
Twitter. We're not saying X. Twitter. We're just not going to do
okay.
it.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Some people get upset. And then Softball America with, yes, there is one L. We're trying to get that fixed. I don't know why that was the thing before. But yeah, we have a whole podcast network. Nicole Mendez, an OU alum, has her own like Big 12 podcast. They've been doing a great job. We just had a live interview with Jocelyn Apollo after she announced she's going to do AUX today. And so she kind of had an emotional response of just being in two pro leagues, which is really cool. But everything can be found at softballamerica.com and then following me at Brady Vernon. And so I'll have live updates for almost every game I try to watch on the weekend with my quad box and my 3 laptops at the same time. But yeah.
You guys do a great job over there. Again, I don't choose sides when it comes to Softball American D1. We've got subscriptions to both. You both do incredible work. I am pro college softball coverage, so if there's a feud, I'll let you guys handle that. Leah, if people want to, Leah, I want you to just start like trash talking people on Twitter. I want to do one of those things. It's like, you know, when people send the photos in and they're like, please take my girlfriend out of this, and then the guy makes it super weird instead. Like, I need that for you, but yeah. You're like, Leah, trash, like, say something mean about me.
I need to be just safe on the bench. That's where my like safety was, behind Coach Pink and my all-star players.
But where can everybody follow you, Leah?
You can follow me on Twitter at Leah without an H, CJ21, and then TikTok, Leah without an H, CJ12. I don't know why I did that.
It's okay. It's all right. You do. 1012 Network for us on Twitter, 1012 Pod on Instagram and Threads. 2 great interviews coming up. Like I said, it's a long episode. That's okay. We got a lot of great content. Coach Jamie Pinkerton and Leah, you don't have to hear me talk for a little bit. And then myself and Jenna Becerra talking about Arizona State, and Utah. We will be back. Enjoy it. We'll be back next week. What are we going to talk about? Softball. Beyond that, I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, we have a really special guest on today's podcast, my favorite Big 12 coach and my former head coach at Iowa State University, Coach Jamie Pinkerton. Coach Pink, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, it's good to see you twice in a weekend, Leah, and not a former coach. I'll always be your coach, I hope.
Oh my gosh. Yes, you will always be my coach. And I know you're pretty lucky. You got to see me over the weekend when you guys had a big series win, which honestly, it was the highest ranked series win in program history. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. But let's just kind of go through that series, walk people through kind of your point of view, what you were sensing. But let's start with that Friday game What were you feeling? What were the vibes while you guys were hitting, while you were warming up before that 4 o'clock game against OSU?
I think you've been a player in our program for 4 years, and a proud graduate, and we're proud of you and what you're accomplishing as a young woman, obviously. So I'm very proud of you. Just a normal pregame went through. Energy was good. Just preparing for OSU. We had the scouts, and knew that we would face Kilfoyle that in game one. We guessed, but we knew and prepared for all their pitchers, but knew that the probability that we would see Kilfoyle and Rosenberry and Aycock at some point. We had done our preparation. Just a normal day with a nice, beautiful mid-April weather. I think if you remember that same this same weekend. Last year we were playing in 32 degree weather, so it was nice to be in the it was upper 60s and 70s on Saturday, and then the 80s yesterday. Everything went about as normal. We went through our routine and did what we did in the locker room, went over our scouting cards and final scouting reports before going up out and loosening up for the game. So everything went pretty close to that, and then obviously the game started, and it turned out to be a pitcher's duel. Lauren Skirman came out and threw five strong for us and kept us in the ball game, which she could ask. You couldn't ask for any better performance. And then we just kind of hung around and got the one run from Ashley Minor with the solo homer. And with Oklahoma State's bats, at any time they can explode. And I'll have to be honest with you. When Ashley hit the home run, I was sitting there thinking, with their offense, one run wasn't going to win it. And then we squeezed out the run in the sixth inning, and then it was up 2-0. And then at that point, Jaden comes in and gets six up and six down. And I just thought it was a real good feat of our young pitchers. Obviously Lauren being a freshman, and Jaden, kind of being a sophomore, but last year when you were with us, she was injured most of the year. So to be able to get her to close it out with a young pitching staff against a one of the best teams, let's make no mistake about it. They're still a quality opponent, and still I would still expect them in Oklahoma City. So we were just able to hold on and win 2-0. And I think in that game, there wasn't a lot of hits and a lot of runs. It was a pitcher's duel, and we haven't been that was our first game that we scored two runs or less and won this year. It was we were good defensively, obviously great in the circle, and then had a couple of timely hits and some quality at bats late in the game to tack on that insurance run.
Yeah, so you could say all three facets were in play. One of your favorite sayings.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you remembered something that I tried to teach you, but yeah, I mean, definitely, I think we've had the opportunity to have that go in our direction, all three facets at a few times this season. It's been few and far between, obviously, with the injury to Saya. So it was good to see the young pitching staff string some innings together and keep us in a ball game, because we knew it, obviously, with Kilfoyle, we knew it was going to be very tough.
Yeah, she's been on fire lately. Really exciting. But you kind of mentioned it already. These young pitchers have been dominating. I mean, Big 12 softball is a beast in itself. It's really intense. And for Lauren to be able to come out and hold OSU in those 5 innings, talk about how she kind of prepared and how Coach Kate helped her calm those nerves. I'm assuming she might have been a little nervous. I mean, OSU is
I
crazy good.
mean, I think she's past the point of nervousness. I mean, obviously she's pitched in Big 12 games, but I think that she went. I mean, her, both of her parents are athletes. Her dad was an NHL soccer or a hockey player, NHL soccer, NHL hockey player, and mom was an Olympian figure skater. So I mean, she's going to put the work in, and she does a good job. And you know, you've been around our program, you know the work that Kate puts in into a game plan, and she just went out and executed. And there's been times this year that she's thrown really well, and there's at times that you know, she's kind of struggled, and she kind of went through that Sunday. But I mean, I think on Sunday, you know, Oklahoma State, you know how the Big 12 is when you see someone two times in a series, it's really hard to get through the lineup multiple times. And yeah, she made it through the lineup two, a little over two times on Friday. And then you know, just there's just too many looks, and Oklahoma State took advantage, and it kind of rolled up on us on Sunday. But she you know, she did a good job. She hit her spots, worked ahead in the count. I think she was ahead in the count and almost every bat. Not she wasn't 100%, but almost ahead in the count and every batter she faced. And she we didn't have a walk in the game. Jaden or Lauren didn't have a walk, and I think that was key to the success and kept the high leverage innings out of it. And then you know, as being a player, you get a walk and an error, and then all of a sudden things become high leverage, and the heart rate gets going, and that's when mistakes happen. And we kept base runners to almost as minimal as you could in that game, and that was a great deal for our success, and we were able to scratch out a couple of runs.
Yeah, that was really exciting. And then on to Saturday, obviously OSU series since I can remember has always been so close. We pull out a win and then the next game is either run by, or won by a couple runs. So going into the second game, Malaysia has a leadoff home run. What kind of was going through your head when you guys were up early on?
As tough as runs come against, I mean, what's amazing is the ERAs that Oklahoma State. I mean, you know, Coach Gajewski does a great job. I have the utmost respect for him, and you know, just being able to see what he's done with that program in the 9 years he's been there. You know, Kilfoyle had like a 0.84 ERA going in. And had given up less than 10 extra base hits all year. And Rosenberry had like a 1.3 or 4. I don't have the numbers in front of me. And she had given up less than 10 extra base hits on the season. And for Malaysia to kind of set the tone with that solo shot in the first, we were on the board. And then, we kind of landed the first blow. And I figured game two would be higher scoring, and then once again everybody locked down. It was 1-0, then they took a 2-1 lead, and then we were able to get a first and third situation in the sixth inning. Then it was really kind of it's kind of like Major League Baseball. You're always going to take the double play, give up the run, and that limits a big inning, right? So when they backed up double play depth and we got the ground ball and scored and tied, I thought, oh, okay, here we go. I kind of had a flashback to our Sunday game in Stillwater, where okay, this is a Saturday afternoon game that might go 8, 9, 10, 11 innings like the one last year. And then, you know, then the seventh unfolded, and we got the runners on and got into a situation where Spellhog was at third, and I just said, hey, Camille is a fly ball hitter, and just knew that if we could get one in the air, we were going to gamble. We had the contact play on. I said, please, anything but a line drive at somebody. Because, you know, with Spellhog speed, we would be able to push that run across. And when I said, if it's in the air, you just come back, you do what you have to do, don't leave early, and I'll hold you late. And then it got up in the air. And then when I saw the left fielder turn her back, I knew it was over. But I knew it was hit well, but I didn't. I was so focused on Carly getting back the bag and tagging up that I didn't realize how well it was hit. And then the wind helped it, obviously, and it got out of the park, which, you know, then that's when, the chaos was, is All right, the game's over, and I'm sitting there waving. Everyone, so why are you waving the safe sign? I'm telling everybody to get back. We don't need any illegal touching. But with it being no outs, even if there was, it would still been a 4-2 win. But to see Camille have that moment as a senior, that was top notch in my book. I was excited for him. I was excited for the team, but especially for Camille.
Yeah, I was really pumped for Camille too. We talked to her after the game and she said that was right off the bat, she knew it was going to be a home run, which was really exciting. And then ESPN messaged or like sent out a whole mass report on it, which was really cool. And obviously, people might have not seen this, but some of the alumni had to grab a Gatorade or some water and pour it on Camille after the game
Yeah, after
went
you
on the
told me to
field.
wrap it up.
Coach Fink. It was the after the talk was getting long, and I just wanted to see you guys and talk to the players, and so did everyone else. So, I mean, what did you have to? That's great. What did you have to say after the game? Like, what were you telling the girls after they just had, the highest ranked series?
You've been in in postseason or postseason post game talks, and they're not, they haven't been as long this year, but it was congratulating the pitching staff, obviously, once again. They did a great job, and congratulating Malaysia had a heck of a defensive
Oh,
play
she did.
in that
Yeah.
game. So we made some plays defensively. Once again, your favorite saying, all three facets were back in line. And then we were just able to get position. I would have been as just excited for a 3-2 win as a 5-2 win. But when you have the dramatics of a walk-off, the crowd was good. I mean, we had nice weather. You know how it is in Ames. If we have good weather, we have good crowds. And it was just fun to sit back and once I could get everybody back off the plate, it was fun to watch. It was actually more rewarding to go back and see how she reacted around the bases. Our film Cy TV Cyclone TV staff did a good job of capturing that, and it's kind of hard to live that while it's going on, and you're making sure everyone's touching bases and everything like that. But to go back and see the joy that the team had, and especially Camille and everything with Camille has had some adversity this year. Everyone knows what she went through with through Mexico. Then she had the injury in Virginia and missed 2 weeks, and then she's fought through some injuries. So it was really satisfying for me to see her be able to have that success.
Yeah, it was really exciting to watch her, but if I'm being honest, I went back and watched the home run and to see you jumping up and down and trying to get everyone back so they weren't touching the base. I think everyone needs to go and watch that because it just made me so happy. It cracked me up to see everyone so happy, but especially you because you're pretty even keel on third baseline. You don't always crack a smile sometimes when the dugout's giving you a hard time or they're telling
Yeah,
you to get out of the way, but
I think that's been a while. It's been a, you say that, and that's true. My goal as a coach, and I think you probably, me, I can get hyped and get after a player, but it's not very often. But in the box, my goal is always, if you look at me, I want to have the composure that you can't tell if our team's winning or losing. And I can only think of a couple of times. I think Carly Spellhog and against you and I in the regional is one of the times I think that I kind of bounced up and down. I'm afraid to pull something,
you are getting there. You're getting old, so.
I know, and you'll remind me of that.
Oh, 100%. I gotta keep reminding you. That's why I stick around. That's why you get to see me all the time now.
But that game's one that I remember. I did jump up, and I think, in that postseason run in 21, when Sammy Williams had the back-to-backs on I don't know if they were consecutive days, but it was at least Friday and Sunday against Kansas that really kind of got us in the RPI position to go to postseason in 21. I think the second one I kind of bounced a little bit. So there's a only two or three times that I can think of that I got that excited. But just with what Camille's been through, I think created that excitement, with everything that she's gone through this season. So It was I was really happy. I didn't cry, which I'm capable of tearing up.
Yeah, you have
But
teared up a few times.
huh?
I said you have teared up a few
Yeah,
times.
I was excited for.
Yeah, I mean, we all were. She has worked so hard, and like you said, she's been through a lot this season. It was just exciting to see all that hard work be put into action. But obviously, you guys have quite a few big games coming up. Iowa tomorrow, hopefully, fingers crossed with the
Yeah,
weather.
no, it's I'm more worried about can we find a makeup if something, 100% chance of rain. They're talking hell, 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and I'm sitting out on the porch right now because it's so nice out here. I just hope I don't have to replace a roof on a house that I replaced last year because of the hell that we had. You remember that storm?
Yeah.
I hope we're able to play it, but if not, hopefully this time of year you only got about a 2 week window, and if you don't play, can you get a makeup date? And
Right.
it's been kind of a weird year weather-wise with the weather-wise we weren't predicted. Texas Tech came here, and we usually do a pretty good job of watching the temperatures and adjusting schedules and everything, and then to have 7 inches of snow when it wasn't even forecasted, that kind of set things in motion for hopefully Big 12 scheduling, where maybe we can catch a break the first couple of weeks. But you know how cold it can be here. Hard to believe that four of our five Big 12 series are already open, over with, and we're only in the second or third week of April. So we don't play again until May here. So it's the winter's been kind of an anomaly, except for that one. It's been nice. We've been outside more than we ever have, but that snowstorm was kind of freak, and kind of messed things up. So I think it's probably going to have a little bit of an impact on the standings before it's over with.
Yeah, definitely. I just want to also make a note. You've never lost to Iowa, right? I hope I didn't jinx that.
I didn't acknowledge what you said. So what was that, Leah?
You've never lost to Iowa?
That's what the press release says. I'm not going to say it.
Okay. Okay. I've never lost to Iowa either. So,
Yeah.
and you know, my whole family was big Iowa Hawkeye
Oh
fans growing up.
yeah, I trolled your mom the other day. I don't know if you saw it. You kind of came in behind me.
On what? Where did you troll my mom?
When
On
she had
Twitter?
the cookies wearing the Hawkeye stuff.
Yes, yeah. She does, and she does know your favorite cookie, and she always brought you some when she could, so
Yeah, no. But I had to troll her on that when she was
yeah.
wearing. I said, "Where did that gear come from?" I forgot what I said, but I—that's the first time I've ever trolled anybody.
You troll people all day, every day. You just don't know it. Abby would have to agree. The whole bench squad would have to agree. BTF for
Okay.
sure. So with these big series coming up, what are you looking forward to, or what are you looking for most in the team against, BYU, Texas, a couple of your midweeks? How are you wanting to finish this team or this season?
Well, I think, obviously we'd like to finish strong like we usually have in the past. I think this last week that we've played well and starting to come around a little bit. We got to stay healthy. We've been nicked up and banged up a lot more. Camille's missed extended time. As Saya hasn't played since the second week of the season. With an upcoming scout coming up, we're probably going to have a couple of people out tomorrow against Iowa and possibly BYU. We just got to stay healthy and continue to as you say, all three facets. But we if we can do that, I think we'll be all right and finish where we need to be. Obviously, that coveted top six for the tournament's coveted, where you don't have to play the play-in game this year. But I think if our pitching staff continues to get better and do what they did this past week and kind of carry that momentum into tomorrow and into Provo, we'll be in decent shape. But I mean, obviously, continue doing what we're doing right now, just playing good defense and get timely hitting, which we had all last week, and then hopefully maybe the pitching's hitting its stride.
I also want to highlight Mo Angelina Allen. She's been having one heck of a season. What are the differences that you're seeing from last season to this season? Not just hitting wise, but like her in that leadership position as a captain and her even in left field.
Man, she's been fantastic. I think the big difference, I think you remember when she came in as a freshman, and I mean, people don't have a book on you. So, there's not a lot of film, there's not a lot of information out there. She had a good freshman year. I think last year, I think people kind of figured out the edges and the fringes on how to work her. I think she probably wasn't as patient at the plate as she was her freshman year. And then I think she went back after last year and having that down year after people figured things out. I think it started out as people figured it out. She got frustrated. I'd like to hear Mo's answer. I'm just going off what I think. And I think, she wasn't frustrated, but she got herself out. She wasn't as patient at the plate, and people had figured out how to attack her weaknesses, and she'd get deeper into counts where they could attack weaknesses, and she had to expand the zone. I think this year, I think she had a good summer working with Elite Baseball in Chicago and got in the cages a lot and kind of tightened up some of the holes in her swing. And I think this year she's done a lot better job of knowing what her pitch is and what people are trying to do, and then attacking early in the count and being efficient with her at bats and not getting into counts that were not favorable to her. And I mean, probably the first month of the season she was hitting like 550, and I just hope that she continues to get good pitches that we, that Lili behind her, which is Alicia Ranches, to listeners out there. And Tiana Poole and Carly Spellhog all continue to hit well behind her, because right now, our top five's been pretty solid, and Ashley Miner's been in there too. If they can continue to be strong behind her, she'll continue to see pitches, and she's got All American numbers. If we can hold her where she's at, and I say we, she's the one doing all the work, but if she can continue doing what she's been doing the year, I feel pretty confident we'll have an All-American.
Yeah, I from the outside looking in, she just looks like her confidence level has skyrocketed. She's having fun. I could tell from the games that I watched, she was enjoying it. Malaysia's obviously helping her a lot in the outfield. Malaysia's been doing so well as well, but it just looks like she's having a lot of fun. It looks like a lot of the girls are having a lot of fun. I have to ask, how has the bench been chirping wise since I've graduated?
We're young there. We lost our captain in that department, and we're going through a rebuilding phase. Abby's been holding it down. Obviously Camille's not in there as much, so she's having to direct traffic from other places. But it's, I don't ever hear what anyone says until another coach says, "Oh, that was a good one," or "Pink, that was borderline," or something like that.
Oh.
And I said, "Oh, they better not be crossing the line." But back to the good point about Malaysia, going back, I want to add one thing to that.
Yeah.
I think Malaysia's helped settle her, and I think Mo's season last year picked up when we flipped. She went, I think she got more comfortable having the pressure of first base and defense. I think she got, when we made that switch to bring Carly, wasn't comfortable in the outfield, and Mo was kind of a little bit uncomfortable at first, and we didn't want to make her a DP. I think being out there with Malaysia and playing outfields made her more comfortable defensively, which has helped her offensively. But I will tell you, Coach Moore misses you.
I know. Well, it's funny you said Abby and Camille because those are the two that I had to warn him about on the episode when I was interviewing him. He's like, "Who should I be worried about on the bench?" And I said, "Abby and Camille, they're pretty vicious, but always we never go over the line, even when coaches say, "Oh, that's borderline," that
Yeah.
it never was. We
We
promise, always
know we
respectful.
had one episode. We won't mention coach or team, but
My gosh.
you were actually paying a compliment, and
Right, right.
that person thought you were dogging it.
Yeah, and we were being so nice, giving them a compliment, and just they weren't up with the lingo.
I wasn't up with the lingo, so I couldn't defend you.
We got to keep you young. We'll teach you everything we need to everything you need to know. But I have to agree with, again, back to the Mo situation. I have to agree. The second she went to outfield, I think she was feeling way more comfortable. And Carly is just so athletic, moves so quickly side to side. Like she's perfect at first, which is funny when she came in as a freshman, as a second baseman, and then to be able to move her anywhere. She honestly, you could put her anywhere on the field and she'd do great.
Oh,
And
I
I think
agree.
that's
I
what
agree with
makes
that.
Iowa State softball so fun, is there's so many girls like that, like Olivia Wardlow. Put her at second, put her in the outfield. Now she gets to DP, which is really exciting. Seeing her,
And
all of her hard work.
what a year
Right.
the Assumption alum, your fellow alum. How
Yes.
many state titles did you win together?
Together, three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three.
She's
It was
having
pretty exciting.
I'm really happy for her too, because she bided her time and probably could have had more opportunities, and it didn't come. She was like, I mean, she's definitely like you. Coach Farrell did a great job with you guys. You guys put team first, and just like you, I know that maybe that's not the role. She would like more of a role, but I mean, she's the consummate teammate like you were, and does whatever we need, from slapping to going to the outfield. A couple of years there, we kind of took slapping away from her a little bit, trying to get her to learn how to swing, and we've kind of let her go back to slapping, and she's really taken off this year. So really proud of O.
Yeah, me too. I mean, yes, we played high school together, but to see her evolve at Iowa State, and like you said, she's a great teammate, can always compete when her name is called. So it's just exciting to see how she's doing. It's exciting to see how everyone's doing. I'm really looking forward to how the rest of the season goes. I'm going to try to come back to another home game, weather permitting. I mean, I had a great time watching, seeing everyone, but I just want to thank you, Coach Pink, for, I know you're super busy, but letting me kind of interview you for
Oh,
this
no,
podcast.
anything for you. How many? I mean, I made a point to get around to all of you, and I didn't, obviously, would like to have spent more time with you all, but it was so cool to see you guys. You guys probably had, there was probably, what, 8 or 9 of you?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I could list them. It was me, Jaden, Sky, Mac was there, Sammy came, Sarah, Janessa, Casey, Nat, probably maybe more. I can't remember, but
Yeah,
it was really
well,
exciting.
I'm upset then, because I missed Mac.
She might have only been there on, I think she came on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if I'd have seen her, I'm disappointed I didn't. Win or lose, you know me, I always take time to
Yep.
talk to, whether it's our pioneers, or we had some pioneers out on the field with you
I
guys
saw, yeah.
we call, for the listeners out there, pioneers are some of the ladies on the first teams in the early 70s. So it's really, really cool to see them at the game, and especially when they intermingle with you all. We're trying to build that, so hopefully we can continue that.
Yeah, it was really cool to see everyone come back. It's got to make you kind of feel good too that Iowa State's always home and we're going to feel comfortable coming back and telling you to wrap it up and then going on the field and being able to
Wrap
hang
it
out. And
up. You guys are coming regardless. You guys had games
yeah,
to splash.
we had people to talk to, congratulations hugs, and the whole nine yards. But
Yeah.
again, Coach Pink, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Really proud of how you guys played, how you coached. I'm excited to keep following, and good luck the rest of the season.
I appreciate you. Love you, Leah.
Love ya.
Next year, the Big 12 will have three new softball programs when the, as we've coined Corner Four join the conference. Colorado, of course, does not play stickball of any kind. Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah will be playing in the Big 12. And so I felt like it was a good time to kind of take a look at those three programs, see what they look like now, and kind of project forward to next year of what they could look like in their first year in the Big 12. Very excited to have Jenna Becerra joining us today. She is the host of the Believe in Softball podcast, as well as has covered the Pac-12 for quite some time, played softball in the Pac-12. So obviously someone who is a great person to talk about three Pac-12, soon-to-be Big 12 programs. Jenna, welcome to the 10-12.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's crazy that this is already just about on the horizon for these changes to take place. So it should be an interesting one.
It's weird when I go look at, like, obviously prepping for football for the offseason and looking at things have already been updated to have Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah in the conference, and Oklahoma, Texas not in the conference. Like, they're technically still here because we're still playing softball and baseball and tennis, but they're also, like, half of the some sports are still in the Big 12, and some sports are already basically in the new conference that they're going to be in. So it's a real weird year. It's very odd.
It is. This time of year is weird. Now that basketball's over, specifically too, to your point, so it really is just a handful of sports left. I think gymnastics is at NCAAs right now, for example, but like it largely is baseball and softball.
Yeah. Well, tennis is entering its postseason. Big 12 tournament starts this week. So it's so weird to feel like you're as a conference and as schools, you're in like two places at once, depending. I don't know. Anyways. Okay.
Yeah.
it's only going to get weirder even when they get in conference, but we do have three Pac-12 programs that will be Big 12 softball programs in Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah. Two of those with very long history of success. I want to kind of go through each one, look at them this year and look at them projected forward, and then kind of your thoughts on the Big 12 once they all join. Let's start, I don't want to say start at the bottom, but let's kind of go in reverse order as far as where those teams stand at the moment. Arizona State, let's start with them. They're currently 18-22 overall, 2-13 in conference play here in Coach Bartlett's second season at the helm. She took over after a previous head coach whose name I can't recall, but is the head coach at Texas A&M. Sorry.
Trisha Ford.
Thank you. Left for Texas A&M. Bartlett, who was already on staff, she was an assistant at Texas. Sorry.
Yeah.
Took over. I mean, this is second season. It's been a rough kind of 2 years so far. It feels like they went 22-16 last year, looking at probably a losing record again. What is your view on the state of Arizona State softball? And again, it's a program that has won national championships, has a long history of success, that just feels like it's having a just kind of a rough 2 years.
Absolutely, yes. So they have two national titles in their history in 2008 and 2011. And I played against that 2011 team, and they were very, very good. But I would say it's early days. I just actually had Coach Bartlett on the Believe in Softball podcast. She was my most recent interview, and we talked about this in depth, what actually goes into building and rebuilding a program. I think context matters here. Early on, when you're rebuilding a program, most people don't have a winning record in that first year. In her case in particular, she had about, I think, 8 players who were actually on the team with the transfer portal and all these movements. Again, Coach Ford leaving, going to A&M. 8 people. So she had to really go deep into the transfer portal, comb through it, try to recruit people who she felt would also be a culture fit. So it wasn't just about getting players, just anyone. It was about getting the right players for ASU too. So when you think about that's where she was at, she's really been at ASU for about a year and a half. It's her second season, but it's been about a year and a half. I think that they're just in the early stages. I think it'll just take time. And she said that. She's like, anything worth building takes time. And that's where they're at right now. I think about other programs in the Pac-12, like Cal, for example, when Chelsea Spencer came in and took over her alma mater, they were sub 500 too the first season. Jessica Allister, same thing at Stanford. And now Stanford went to the World Series last year. Cal made it to postseason last year, and they've been ranked pretty consistently throughout this season. It just takes time. You just have to get there. And it's not the first time that she's been a part of a rebuild either at Arizona State, because they have such a strong alumni base, to your point, with the rich history that they have there. I just think we need to give them more time. It's in addition to rebuilding the program, changing into a new conference, throw that on the list too, of all the crazy things that have been going on the last year and a half with Bartlett and her staff. One thing that I think has helped is that they have a common thread in assistant coach Jimmy Kalaitis. He was already at Arizona State before, and he's, you know, one of the people at the top of everyone's list every year. If there's an opening to coach somewhere, like he's on that list and he stayed. And I think that's helped with some consistency as well. It's hard right now. They also have a ton of injuries. Like, that is something that is out of everyone's control. Their number one and number two pitcher are both out, and they have been. That's huge. You know, I mean, they do have six arms total, I think, but when number one and number two are both out, like, that's obviously forced some of the other arms to step up and eat up a lot more innings. But it's not just them. It's like others have had injuries as well. Like, Jordan Van Hook hasn't been able to play a lot of defense because she had sprained her ankle, a high ankle sprain right before the season started. Like, it's just kind of one thing after the other. So when you take into account the entire context of what's going on in Tempe, I actually then start to be somewhat impressed by what they've been able to do, even though it hasn't yet reflected in their record and in the numbers. I think it's coming.
So you feel good about the direction of the program heading forward as they head into the Big 12?
I think so. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, losing Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC obviously is a big change for the Big 12. But that's a lot of history, especially the last 10 years, the amount of national championships that Oklahoma has won, of course. But to bring in programs like Arizona State, Arizona, who have national championships under their belts in their histories, I think you're bringing in history too. So I think that is going to add another layer that's going to just up level the Big 12.
Absolutely. Okay, so moving up, we're going to talk a little bit about Utah. Utah, a darling last year, making it to the Women's College World Series. Not a team everyone had pegged to do so. My head coach, Amy Hoag, that was their first trip to the Women's College World Series since 1998, if I recall. I'm trying to think back.
Last millennium, yeah.
it's been a minute. It's been a minute since they've made it to OKC. A dip back this year, obviously losing your hitting coach, who is Agasso, and losing some star players off that Utah team. It's still 25-17, 7-11 in conference play. This feels like a program, and correct me if I'm wrong here, that is consistently solid with some really high peaks. Does that feel about right to you when describing Amy Hoag's Utah Utes?
I would say so. I would say so. And they came in, you know, we didn't have Colorado from a softball standpoint, as you mentioned, but when they came in, that was when the Pac-12 went from the Pac-10 to the Pac-12. And historically, you know, more than half of the national titles in ever since the NCAA adopted softball back in 1982 have been from the Pac-12. So when Utah made that switch into the Pac, I asked Amy Hoag like what that transition was like. And she said, you know, it was really tough. Like, it is postseason level battles every single weekend. And so I think that's something to take to keep in mind as well, when, like, if you look at their records and things like that, like who they're actually playing all the time is a really big piece to it. And I remember I described this program as very scrappy. Like, that was sort of the concept that stuck out in my mind, even from playing against them back in the day. And I remember mentioning that to Amy Hoag, and she was like, you know, I used to hate that term because I feel like we're more than scrappy. Like, we're more than just that. She was like, but since then I've kind of reframed it in my mind to where, if that means to everybody that, like, we don't take a pitch off, we don't let anyone take a break, we're just relentless in competing, then I'm okay with that. And I would say that that's how they are. Like, that's why they have those peaks that they've had. Last year, they had just sort of a perfect storm. Amy Hoag was like, I would love to have this kind of team, you know, every single year. Alyssa Bonstrom, their All-American, has since graduated, so she's not there this year, but she was a big presence both in the locker room and on the field. But they still have some great pitching, and some of the pitching they had last year too, with like Mariah Lopez, the lefty, for example, on that World Series run. So I just think, yes, that's a good way to describe them. They're always solid. I think they just always surprise people. They're not surprised because they know they can do it, just like when they won the Pac-12 tournament last year. I don't think they were surprised because they've worked towards it every day. But I think they're at a point where they kind of enjoy proving people wrong.
We'll talk about Arizona in a second. And Arizona has a lot of history success. Arizona State has a lot of history success. Utah, like we said, solid team that has high peaks. Utah feels like, Utah fans, I think, across many sports get upset when we say they feel like a Big 12 school, because I do feel like they do from a program standpoint. But it does feel like they fit in from a kind of in the middle of the Big 12 pack there with your Baylors and your Texas Techs and Kansases and now UCFs, of solid programs who typically have success and have really high peaks and then have kind of down years in there. But the solid programs, we've kind of talked about them that way, but does that feel right to you? Kind of that's where they will fit kind of in the new Big 12.
In the middle of the pack, I think that's fair to say. Yeah. I look at, for example, UCF in their first year in the Big 12, and they're right there in the middle. And I don't know if everyone would have necessarily thought that that would be the case, but having covered them and actually have some coworkers at D1 softball who cover them in depth, like, it wasn't a huge surprise to me. What Cindy Ball Malone is doing over there is wonderful. Her staff's outstanding with like a Jen Salling, who does have PAC ties, having gone to UW herself as well. I think like I get the same type of energy from Utah that I get from UCF, which is just like competing constantly. Like, they just do not stop. It's all gas, no brakes. And I think that kind of sometimes will take you over the edge. If you're in a game where it could kind of go either way, like, sometimes that's the energy that'll tip in your favor.
You mentioned D1 softball and UCF. That has to be Eric Lopez, who, of course, friend and contributor here on the podcast, and is the one who recommended we reach out to you. So
sure is.
We're big fans of Eric. All right, let's talk about Arizona. This is a program that has won 8 national championships under former head coach Mike Candrea. Has like 5 national runner-ups. He was in charge of this program for a very, very long time. And the last 3 years, it has fallen to Caitlin Lowe to run the show. She made it to the Women's College World Series in 2022, not last year, but does feel like a bounce back year for Arizona this year, 28-13, 99 in Pac-12 play, and has been kind of in and out of the rankings throughout the seasons, had some big wins, has battled really close with some really solid programs this year. This feels like a program that may not is not what I would say is at the Mike Candrea at its peak, winning, 3-4 national championships within a 5-year period. However, it still feels like a program coming into the Big 12 that I would say is still, not just from the history standpoint, but currently maybe the best of the three as they enter in the Big 12 next year.
Yeah, and right now they're of the three, they're the ones who are in the national rankings, and they have been pretty consistently. And they're actually dealing with injuries too. So I don't even think like they're at 100%. Imagine if they were, right? Like, you're missing a Devin Nets who's been out the entire season, who's a great two-way player, like in the circle, can hit, do all those things, and you don't have some of those assets. And they're still doing what they're doing right now. I mean, they had a great like series win over Oregon recently. I think for Arizona, the history is a big part. I think the fact that Caitlin Lowe was an alum at Arizona, so that's something that's also true for Amy Hogue at Utah. She went to a World Series as a player at Utah, and then ultimately went last year with her team. Caitlin Lowe won 2 national championships as a Wildcat, right? So there are like those elements that you can bring into it. It's been a roller coaster. The first year that Caitlin Lowe was at the helm, they go to the World Series. And I think she was the first female coach to ever do that in her first year as a head coach or something to that effect. And then last year, they don't make the NCAA tournament for the first time in over 30 years. So it's been quite a peak, quite a valley. And then now I think they're bouncing back, and this is very much a reset year, to your point. But I just think that a lot of it comes back to the staff as well. That's why I mention them somewhat often, because that's what head coaches talk about too. It's about who's going to help you help the team get there. And Lauren Lappin is a great asset for Arizona, for example. She's Stanford alum, but also an Olympian. They were Olympic teammates. They were pro teammates winning the championship and the MPF together. Like, there are people in these positions who know what it takes to win. That also means they know how to be resilient and get through some of the tough times, which is, I think, what they faced last year, also dealing with some injuries. But yes, Arizona, one of the most storied programs in college softball, period. You know, I mean, UCLA has the most national championships. Arizona's right after that. That is certainly a boost to the Big 12, just in terms of experience on top of it. So I think they're a team that always can hit. Arizona State's very similar too, where they can swing it, you know? So they can get into these slugfests and really compete. And I think that's going to bode well in the Big 12.
Right. It is a little bit frustrating for Arizona this year to feel like they're having the best season under Caitlin Lowe and the injuries limiting that from what could have been even a better regular season. Obviously, postseason, I think we kind of help judge the outcome of whether a season is successful or not. And so they have a big opportunity there as a team we expect to see in regionals, at least. But I mean, it does feel like this is her best team, and injuries have limited what is still a solid program right now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the World Series team from her first year back in 2022, I don't think a lot of people thought that they were going to make it all the way to OKC. But they have a lot of the pieces now. I would say they had some people transfer too since that first year, right? Charlize Palacios, Janelle Meonio, they both went to UCLA. So they've had movement in that regard too on the roster. But I do think in a lot of ways, this may be the best Caitlin Lowe team. In some ways you could argue that first one, but this one I think feels a little bit different in terms of their culture, which is something that she's talked about as well. Just the getting things right in the locker room is such an important piece to all of this, to be able to compete. So I think that that's something that they've definitely reset this year too.
I want to wrap on this. I've kind of had this conversation with Eric, and I feel like I am very confident saying, look, the Big Ten adding UCLA and Oregon and Washington is big for the Big Ten. Obviously the SEC is the best softball conference, and they're adding Oklahoma, Texas, which is just, you know, ridiculous. The ACC has become more and more solid with how good Duke has been and the Clemson's rise, and obviously Florida State. And they're going to add Stanford and Cal. Stanford, of course, being absolutely fantastic, and Cal on their rise. When you add, even with the loss of Oklahoma and Texas, when you're adding Arizona, Arizona State especially, and adding Utah, I think I can make the case that the Big 12 will be the second best softball conference behind the SEC next season moving forward. Do you think that's fair, or does the ACC or Big Ten have a more legitimate case for second best?
That's interesting. Because that's what's tough, right? Because if I were to make an argument right now, I would say existing conferences, right? That the Pac-12, if you really, really break it down as a whole, top to bottom, is the strongest conference. But they're splitting up to all of these different conferences, as you mentioned. Like, they are going to the ACC, they're going to the Big Ten, they're going to the Big 12. So, like, six of the teams, I think, are ranked nationally, and the three that aren't are a team that has had two national championships, which is Arizona State, Utah, a team that went to the World Series last year, and then Oregon State is a team that went to the World Series 2 years ago, right? Everyone else is ranked. So, when you're splitting up what I consider to be probably the most elite overall conference, it makes it tough to make that decision. Like, cause you do still have an Oklahoma State, right? They've been consistently in the top 10. Baylor's been in and out of the rankings, to your point, in the Big 12. But I think three of the top Pac-12 teams are going to the Big 10, but you could argue that there's some more talent in the Big 12 existing today than there is in the Big 10 today. You can make an argument for any of the three, which actually I think is very exciting. Because in a world that feels like we're getting closer and closer and closer to super conferences, the SEC, it makes sense with Oklahoma especially moving in Texas, like that's going to be a huge focus. But to have that sort of talent spread out throughout the rest, it's a shame to lose the Pac-12, but to have that spread of talent is actually going to be really exciting.
Yeah, I think my argument rides a lot on the bottom of the Big Ten is really bad. And there's an argument for the middle of the Big, like the top of the Big Ten is really good with UCLA, Oregon, Washington, and then Michigan's consistently a solid program. Penn State's good this year, but like the middle and bottom is not.
Yeah, bad. I think the ACC is where I get a little bit more where I'm like, that compared to the Big 12, just because Clemson, Duke, Florida State, and Virginia Tech, plus a Stanford and Cal, right? So that's really solid. I mean, the bottom half, there's still a little bit of a gap there, but it's getting smaller. with the top half of the ACC. So as a whole, I'd say it's probably between, the Big 12 and the ACC.
All right. That's fair. That's fair. I just appreciate the conversation. It's fun. It's fun. It's fun chat to have. Jenna, I really appreciate your time and your insight on the three programs that are going to be joining the Big 12 next year. I look forward to continue for I'm very excited for when that happens. Next year's going to be a ton of fun. 11 teams in the Big 12. We're so used to having seven that having 10 this year is great. Having 11 next year is going to be even more fun, and 9 conference series, which will be exciting. We'll see a lot of firsts, or a lot of just series that we're not used to. Also, I'm sorry, the Holy War is going to be a Big 12 conference series. I can't wait for all of those matchups. Do me a favor. Obviously, you're going to continue to cover the Pac-12, and you cover softball as a whole. I believe in softball, but plug everything for everyone who wants to check out the work you do covering college softball.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So yes, you can follow Believe in Softball. It's with Believe Network, so that's spelled BLEAV. You can follow that on Twitter, Instagram. It's on all the platforms, including YouTube, all the audio platforms, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find that. And then D1 Softball, you can follow as well. It is just D1 Softball on all the social networks as well. And we do have a weekly podcast with Amanda Lorenz as my co-host, and she's obviously fantastic. So that is a really covers like nationwide everything that's going on. And then I also am on the call a lot for Pac-12 networks. So for example, I'll be calling UCLA at Stanford this weekend, which is a really exciting matchup. So you can catch me there for any of the rest of the season, pretty much.
I know you're a Stanford alum, and I know there's a lot of options with the Pac-12 going everywhere, but I will selfishly say I hope that somehow the Big 12 gobbles you up with the three coming in, and you help cover Big 12 softball, because we need more good voices, and we're thrilled to have Eric, and we'll be hopefully be thrilled to have some Pac-12 adoptees into the conference as well.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've had every Pac-12 head coach on the Believe in Softball podcast in the past. I really enjoyed my conversations with Caitlin, with Lowe. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm on a first name basis, casual, whatever. No, with Caitlin, with Amy Hogue, and with Megan Bartlett most recently too. And I just, they're the type of people that you leave the conversation, you feel better, you know, like it's like it lifted you up and you feel a little bit inspired and that sort of thing. And I'm really excited to see what they do in the Big 12, and I'll definitely be keeping a close eye on the whole conference.
Well, we look forward to having them on our show as well. Again, Jenna, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun.
Sports Social Podcast Network.